himself internally. He had just referenced himself as something other than a super, a taboo Mr. Transport had advised them against committing before he'd brought them down that morning. It wasn't just that the program that had created them was classified, which it was. The problem was that if the other students knew that Vince and his group had once been Powards, they were almost sure to face harassment and discrimination. Of course, in a school where there were telepaths, any secret was inevitably going to come out. The goal was merely to avoid that day for as long as possible. "It isn't really hard, per se," Nick responded, breezing over Vince's near screw-up. "It's just different. I know you were on your own most of the time, but for those of us around people, it was an odd experience, always knowing you were the one who was different." Nick was careful to try and cover for Vince, not out of friendship, but out of necessity. Nick wanted every advantage he could get his hands on, and being targeted as a freak among freaks would rob him of too many opportunities for him to permit it.
"You're going to need that support network, too," Dean Blaine continued. "As all of you should know, becoming a hero is a grueling task. You'll be taking combat classes, training your tactical skills, learning to think around corners, and, possibly most importantly of all, you'll be learning about the ethics behind having and using abilities. And of course, you'll be doing all of that while maintaining your secret identity up top."
The sound of groans permeated the audience, which was about 50 people strong. Dean Blaine only gave this talk to freshmen, and despite what many conspiracy theorists believed, the portion of the population that were supers was still remarkably small. Of course, the percentage jumped considerably if one were to include Powards as well, but no one did.
"Now, now, none of that," said Dean Blaine without breaking his smile. "I know many of you have lived out in the open with your abilities for years, but this is how we do things at Lander. Learning to protect a secret identity helps you hone a lot of the skills a hero will need. Ingenuity, thinking on your feet, and planning are all major elements of keeping your secret safe. Those of you who fail at keeping your secret... well, let's just say that fail was the operative word there."
There was no laughter at Dean Blaine's joke, not that he had expected any. That was a joke just for him.
"Of course, there are always extenuating circumstances, but let's just say you should do your best to keep the fact that you're a super close to the vest. If you need to show off, work out, or just get the powers pumping, then you are always welcome down here, where you can be the super we all know you are,"
Dean Blaine reassured them.
"Lovely,"
Alice said, to no one in particular. She had opted to sit alone near the top of the tiered auditorium. She loved that sort of spot because it allowed her a vantage point above all the others, observing and noting their behavior. She had also chosen it because Mary, and for some reason Herschel, had both sat near the bottom. Alice was not about to give that girl any more time staring into her mind than she had to.
"With that settled, let's go over today's activities, shall we?"
Dean Blaine asked rhetorically.
"Since above-ground classes don't start until tomorrow, we'll be using today to do our combat ranking. For those of you who don't know, we do rankings among the classes at the beginning of this and end of every other year. This is so we can get a sense of where you're starting from based on the previous test and how much you've grown by the end. We won't just be taking into account who wins each fight. We'll be looking at how they use their abilities, bodies, and brains to make the most of every situation. Today's will be a single elimination tournament, so the more you win, the more you fight, and the better chance you have to showcase what you can do."
Vince felt his heart sink. All he had for energy was the half a book of matches he had absorbed yesterday while showing off for Nick. Unless he fought someone with electrical or fire abilities, he was going to be working at a big disadvantage. It was really his own fault. Mr. Numbers had warned them there would be combat. He'd even had a passing thought of trying to find a place to absorb energy, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. There was still a nagging voice in the back of his brain, telling him that he would lose control and drain the whole school. Or town. Or state.
"I'd like all of you to come down now and meet the professors who will be overseeing the first battle of your college careers. The freshman combat coaches, Coach George and Coach Persephone," Dean Blaine announced, gesturing to the side of the stage where a pair of people, both wearing sweats, walked on and joined up with the dean in the center. The man was dark-haired, tall, and muscular. The woman, on the other hand, was blonde, lean, curvy, and just plain sexy. She looked like she wouldn't be able to take on a sack of potatoes, let alone watch over supers in combat. Not that that really mattered to the men in the audience, who were staring unabashedly, with only a few exceptions. Nick was certainly not one of those exceptions.
"Look at the tits on her,"
he said, as he and Vince rose from their seats and began making their way to the stage with the rest of their class.
"You better hope she doesn't have enhanced hearing," Vince warned as they descended.
"What? Like she doesn't know she has amazing tits? I mean, we can see them through a sweatshirt. I seriously doubt me saying this would result in a groundbreaking realization for her," Nick defended.
"No, but it could be a skull-breaking one for you. The woman teaches supers how to fight. I can't imagine she's as frail as her form looks," Vince said.
"You have a point," Nick agreed. "On the other hand, though, yowza."
Fortunately for Vince, they reached the stage, and even Nick wasn't dumb enough to keep chatting about their coach's breasts with her in human earshot. At least, Vince hoped Nick wasn't that dumb. Once all the students were together, Coach George stepped forward and addressed them.
"Good morning, new meat,"
he said with a grin that was far more believable than the one the dean still had shellacked onto his face.
"To the upperclassmen, I'm a professor. But you haven't earned that right yet. So to you, my name is Coach George. And by the end of the year, you are going to curse me, my mother for birthing me, and God for allowing me to exist. I am going to work every last one of you down to the bone. I am going to break you apart until you have no concept of what you can or can't do. Because I want each of you to end this year doing things you never thought possible. You will all hate me for the rest of your life. But if you are very skilled and very lucky, you will live long enough to come back here and thank me one day. You will thank me for making you strong enough to survive."
Coach George stepped back, and Coach Persephone stepped forward.
"First off, yes, eyes up at my face, gentlemen. Secondly, I'm going to be training you as well. Though while my brutish counterpart will be teaching your bodies how to endure combat, I will be educating your minds. You will use your powers in new ways you never would have imagined before, and you will do it because the only options I am going to hand you are to find a way or suffer bodily harm. You should know that Coach George and I are the harshest instructors in this academy, because we have to be. This is where you are torn down and built up correctly with the building blocks that will enable you to survive the years to follow. If we do not think you can survive, we will fail you. So work hard and learn fast, or you'll wash out and be no better than a coward."
The students winced visibly at that, The idea of being compared to a powered, kicking them into gear, and setting their determination not to wash out firmly into place. Which, of course, was exactly what Coach Persephone had been aiming for.
"All right," said Dean Blaine. "So before we pair off for the first round of combat, does anyone have any questions so far?"
No hands came up, so Dean Blaine continued.
"Fantastic. Then I want the girls to go to Coach Persephone, and the boys to go to Coach George so they can pair you up."
"Isn't that sexist?"
The question came from a girl near the front of the crowd with dirty blonde hair. Vince looked at her and realized with pleasant surprise that the girl with the pink-streaked short hair from the dining hall yesterday was standing next to the question-asker.
"And what is your name, miss?"
Dean Blaine asked in response.
"Julia,"
the girl replied.
"Let me guess, Julia. You're a women's studies major, right?"
Dean Blaine asked.
Yes,
Julia replied.
"There's always one,"
Dean Blaine said with a sigh.
"We go over this every year, so I'll tell you the same thing, Julia. The point of this test is to get an idea of how you fight against an opponent when you are at relatively equal footing. Both you and your opponent will have an ability, so the only other difference is your physique. And sadly, boys are usually stronger than girls. This means that getting an accurate assessment requires us to pair you with people who have similar body types. If it makes you feel better, though, this is only the case for freshman year. Once you become sophomores and have been trained by George here, we'll be setting you against anyone, regardless of sex."
"I guess that makes sense,"
Julia conceded.
"Great,"
Dean Blaine said.
"Okay, everyone, report to your respective coach and get ready for a good old-fashioned tussle."
11. Vince was impressed at the combat cells Lander possessed. 70 feet by 70 feet in size, they were made of reinforced concrete that was several inches thick, with 5-inch plastic serving as a window and a triple-locked door as the only entrance and exit. What was truly amazing, though, was that there were so many of them. Right now, each member of the freshman class was standing in a cell just like Vince's, staring across at some other student they would soon be facing off against. In Vince's case, the boy who had entered was a few inches taller, a few muscles broader, and a multitude of follicles shorter. His head was perfectly bald, drawing more attention to his striking face and frost-blue eyes. The only other person near them was a girl wearing a white uniform, staring down at them through the glass. She was one of the senior class, doing her duty by watching over the new recruits to make sure no one was killed. Serious injury wasn't a concern, since there were healers on hand, but no one could bring back the dead. At least, no one employed by Lander. Vince and his opponent were both wearing black uniforms of a style similar to the girls. It seemed the hierarchy at Lander was that freshmen wore black uniforms, sophomores and juniors wore gray, and the few seniors that managed to stay in class were issued white. This supposedly represented the students growing closer to the goodness and purity that all heroes were meant to represent. Vince thought it was just that there was more training and fighting in the lower years, and black didn't stain as easily, but he kept that particular theory to himself.
"Introduce yourselves,"
came a female voice from a speaker hidden somewhere in the concrete around them. It took Vince a moment, but he realized it had come from their overseer. Apparently, there was some sort of intercom system set up for the rooms. It made sense. How else was someone going to talk to them through solid walls?
"My name is Michael Clark,"
Vince's opponent said, a broad and confident smile smearing across his face. Vince Reynolds, said Vince.
I like your hair,
Michael commented.
I like your style, Vince reciprocated as best he could.
Michael laughed.
I know it's a bit odd, but you know how that goes, right? What can I say? I just love feeling the cold air against my head.
Vince said nothing, merely kept sweeping his eyes over Michael, trying to get some sense of what the boy would be doing once the metaphorical bell sounded. He didn't have to wait long to find out.
Begin,
said the same crackling intercom voice. Vince resisted the urge to look around for the speaker again, and that discipline was all that saved him. Before the word was even done being spoken, Michael had reared his right arm back and was punching in Vince's direction. Granted, since there was 40 feet between the two of them, it was a ridiculous gesture that shouldn't have endangered Vince in the slightest. Vince leapt to the side anyway. A flash of blue light roared past him, striking the wall where he had been standing only moments before. A quick peek back showed that a long chunk of the wall was now coated in ice. Someone who had cold-based powers. Freaking perfect.
I'm impressed, Michael complimented. Not many people think to get out of the way of a punch from across the room.
I try to prepare for the worst-case scenario, Vince admitted.
Let me know if that helps you,
Michael said as he balled up both of his fists.
Because to be honest, fighting me in the first round is the worst-case scenario for anyone.
Vince didn't respond this time. Instead, he took off running. Michael was a good shot with those freezing punches of his, but he was still shooting from 40 feet away. Vince was quick on his feet, and more importantly, he'd had a lot of practice at running away, so he was able to stay a few steps ahead of each punch as it went out. Michael was no slouch either, though. He began looking to where Vince was running and firing ahead of him. More than once, Vince was only saved by a quick roll to the side or a slide underneath. The upside was that the more Michael fired, the more Vince began to get his timing down. Michael needed to take a deep breath between every two punches, though whether it was part of his fighting style or just a necessary moment to recharge, Vince was unsure. The good thing was that every time he took that breath, Vince had a moment to pause and see where Michael's eyes were aiming. The only real chance Vince had was to wear Michael down slowly until his endurance was thin. Using powers still seemed to require him to use physical actions, so if Vince could get Michael gasping for air, then he might have a chance at getting close to him. Unfortunately, it seemed Michael had figured that out too.
What the hell is your power?
Michael asked as he threw two more freezing punches that Vince leapt over.
Running away?
Vince said nothing, conserving his air for movement, not talking.
If this is all you can do, then you should just give up,
Michael chastised him.
So you've got a weak power. That doesn't mean you should jump around and make an ass of yourself because you're up against a real opponent.
To punctuate his words, Michael let loose another flurry that crashed at Vince's feet. Vince hurtled over the fast-forming ice and kept moving. He realized the problem with his strategy the moment he was away from the slicked ground behind him. The more punches Michael threw, the more ice formed around the room, which made running away increasingly difficult. Already, small pillars and blocks of ice were forming where more than one punch had landed. If Vince didn't bring this to a conclusion soon, he was going to run out of room to dodge.
Damn it!
Michael cursed.
I don't care if you can't fight. Just give up so I can move on to an opponent with some skill.
Michael threw another blast of ice right at Vince's feet, forcing him to jump up into the air, then threw a left punch toward Vince, who was suspended in mid-jump. On instinct, Vince hurled his upper body forward, turning a mid-air somersault and dodging the blue blast that would be blaring down below him in mere instants. But the blast didn't come. Vince crooked his eye back to Michael to see him standing there with an extended left fist and a pulled-back right one. Michael hadn't used a blast out of his left hand. It had been a feint, which meant he still had one to throw. Michael's right arm shot back out just before Vince's feet touched the ground. The concrete below was instantly frozen, impossible to get traction on. Vince was on it only for a moment before his leftover momentum sent him flying onto and across the concrete. As he skidded along the hard surface, Vince tried to think. Michael would have to take a breath now, which meant Vince had maybe an extra second to get to safety. There was no way Vince could scramble up in time. He'd be a sitting target. What other options did that leave him? As he rolled along the ground, he noticed he was near a moderate-sized block of ice that had been built up by Michael's attacks. It wouldn't be much in the way of cover, but it was a better option than anything else Vince had. Rather than trying to get up, Vince used his window to keep rolling, picking up speed and veering his course so that he was able to stop himself directly behind the ice block. The crashing sound of energy accompanied by the cracking sound of growing ice told Vince he had made it just in time. Several more crashes followed, ironically building more ice and reinforcing Vince's defensive wall. Moments later, the sounds stopped.
"So you've resorted to hiding now? Is this the best you've got? You must have some kind of ability or you wouldn't be here. How about you try using it?"
Michael taunted.
"What is it then? Are you just scared of fighting?"
Vince let Michael talk. It bought him precious time. He checked his body and found that, aside from a bloody lip, the fall had given him minimal damage. Vince knew he couldn't stay like this for long. It left him utterly vulnerable if Michael were to come around to this side. Michael was still being a bit cautious because he didn't know what Vince's power was, but that wouldn't last forever. The wear-down approach wouldn't work. Michael could destroy the terrain before he got tired. So, lacking any sort of reliable defense, Vince decided to use the next best thing. Pure offense.
"You seem to be mistaken," Vince said as he pulled himself up carefully from behind the ice block. "Our powers work in contrast to each other. That's why I've been taking the defensive. It was the smart move until I understood your tactics. Let me assure you of one thing right now, though."
Vince slowly, deliberately, wiped the blood from his mouth with the back of his fist.
"I know how to fight."
12.
"Gah!"
Vince cried as he was knocked back across the field, his small body rolling in the grass before coming to a stop.
"How many times do I have to tell you? Learn their timing and adjust your own to fit into their defensive gaps. Most people fight with patterns, and that's all they know. If you can flow through those patterns, they won't even be able to see how you're hitting them, let alone find a way to block you,"
said a tall, dark-haired man in a tattered red coat.
"Sorry, Father,"
Vince squeezed out as he gasped for air. His father's last punch had knocked the breath out of him. He was used to it, though, and would recover quickly. Father didn't hold back when teaching him how to fight, because no one Vince ever went up against would be holding back either.
"You're getting better, Vince," Father encouraged. "You landed 2 punches on my arm that time before you fell into your own rhythm."
Vince managed to pull himself to his feet. Small and slight at 8 years old and wearing ragged clothing, the only thing remarkable about him was his tousled silver hair. That and the look of determination screaming out of his soft blue eyes.
How do I keep from falling into my rhythm?
Vince asked.
Simple,
Father replied.
Don't have one.
I don't know how,
Vince admitted. Father never chastised him for admitting ignorance, saying it was the only way for Vince to find his weak spots and grow stronger.
It's not something that's easy,
Father explained.
You have to be able to adapt to your opponent's style, to work in a way that is the most detrimental to them. The only way to achieve it is through proper training and a variety of skilled opponents. However, you have a slight advantage in this area.
What's that?
Vince asked.
Your power is that of absorption. You can deal in all different types of energies. That means your core nature is an adaptive one,
Father said.
You were built to handle all kinds of different challenges, so I have faith you'll be able to learn how to fight without a form.
How does my ability factor in?
Vince asked harshly.
I can't even control it unless you're around.
Just because you can't control it doesn't mean it doesn't say a lot about you,
Father pointed out.
Now, the train will be pulling out in 2 hours, so if we want to jump on a car, we only have an hour and a half left. Do you want to spend it whining, or do you want to spend it training?
Vince took a deep breath, making sure he had fully recovered from the blow to his stomach and losing his wind. He hadn't, but it was good enough for the moment.
Training,
Vince said with a grin. 10 years later found Vince charging across partially frozen concrete, ducking blue blast blows as they flew toward him, making a beeline for his enemy as he put all of Father's training into use. Vince knew Michael's pattern, and knew that any freezing attack would have to be concluded in a two-punch combo. More than that, and Michael needed a breath. Vince also knew that while Michael's style so far had been long range, the way he held himself and threw his blasts were indicative of someone comfortable with close range fighting. Michael definitely had training, and from the way he had been attacking, Vince was betting it was in boxing. Vince sidestepped another blast as he circled, closing the gap between himself and Michael. It was harder to dodge the closer Vince got, but he'd learned to dodge boxing blows at close combat range. There was no way a punch with a lag time was going to hit him. The problem would be that once Vince closed the gap entirely, he wouldn't be able to take a single one of Michael's punches, or this match would be all over. Normally, he could just count on his practice taking blows to let him work through the pain, but getting frozen solid wasn't something you could grit your teeth and push through. Then, all at once, Vince realized he was in range to actually strike back, and every cohesive thought was gone from his mind. All he saw were his opponent's movements, feeling the pattern that Michael wove to take down his prey. Vince flowed around Michael, using footwork to keep Michael from being able to get off a clean shot. At the same time, Vince began lightly throwing his own punches. Mere taps at first, easy to recover from for both parties. Vince wasn't trying to do damage. He was trying to see how Michael blocked. The more soft blows Michael avoided, the surer Vince was that Michael's training was in boxing, which told Vince exactly how to take him off guard. Vince slid to Michael's side and threw a left directly at Michael's face. Michael blocked it immediately, rearing back his own left to deliver an ice punch to Vince's face. He never got the chance, though, as Vince followed the momentum of his punch through with a hard knee to Michael's ribs. Without stopping, Vince used the force to spin himself around Michael's back, out of range of his frozen fists, and delivered a right-handed blow to the same spot on the ribs he had struck with his knee. Vince was preparing to let fly a punch to the back of Michael's head when the ground beneath his feet suddenly went slick.
Vince backed away quickly, getting onto a part of the concrete that offered more traction at the sacrifice of his position behind Michael. This had obviously been Michael's plan. He must have punched the ground to steal Vince's footing, but Vince had no other option besides playing into it.
"I can't believe it," Michael said. "All that fucking running, and it turns out you have some decent hand-to-hand skills. I'll admit, I did not see that coming."
Vince noticed Michael was talking, but not punching. Maybe he was foggy from the blows, but Vince doubted it. More likely, he had either realized he couldn't hit Vince at this range, or he was trying to lure Vince into relaxing and letting his guard down.
"Of all the things I expected today, using this on someone who hasn't even shown me their power wasn't one of them,"
Michael said. His tone was casual, but his eyes were hard. Vince had embarrassed him, and it was very clear Michael did not take kindly to that.
"You got in some good shots, Vince, but that won't work on me anymore."
As he spoke, Michael's body seemed to turn blue. After a second, Vince realized that ice was forming over Michael's frame, cracking and fissuring as it went to allow movement, while thickening to protect what was underneath. It seemed to take no time at all before Michael was almost totally covered in ice armor. Vince could still make out his eyes through a pair of slits, but there was no way he was going to find a vulnerable chunk of Michael's flesh to pound on this time.
"You did pretty good for being as weak as you are," Michael goaded. "But I want you to see what a real warrior looks like. I'm going to be the number one ranked in this class, because no one is as powerful as me!"
Michael tilted back his armored head and laughed, unconcerned about his worthless opponent, as he stood in the invincible protection his ice offered him. The moment Michael's head was back, Vince began charging forward. He'd made it halfway there when Michael noticed his headlong sprint.
"You think this is for show? Or are you so dumb you really think you can punch through several inches of ice?"
Michael asked, taking his stance once again as Vince drew closer. Vince never slowed down for an instant, running right up to Michael and stopping on his left foot, letting the speed carry his right forward into a powerful round kick. Michael moved to block it, but the foot drew back a few inches before it would have struck the armor around his arm. Vince kept spinning, though, pulling off a complete 360 before planting his right foot down and launching forward on it. Michael realized that Vince was still carrying most of the momentum from the run in his body, and that he was cocked back to throw a punch right at Michael's face. It took everything Michael had not to laugh at this sad, determined idiot. So Vince wanted to break his own hand just trying to land a blow on him? Well, that was just fine by Michael's standards. He knew how powerful his ice was. He didn't even make a motion to block. Let Vince give it his all and fail miserably. Vince kept moving forward, stopping just short of bouncing into Michael's chest and throwing the rest of his momentum into his right fist, just as Michael had expected. Vince furrowed his brow in concentration. He would have to time this just right. Vince's punch soared upward on a dead track for Michael's jaw. A fraction of a second before it hit, though, to Michael's tremendous surprise, a fireball roared forth from the clenched fist, striking the icy covering an instant before Vince's flesh did. Black and white spots flashed in front of Michael's eyes as he landed on his back. He couldn't understand it. Vince had hurled a fireball to melt and weaken his armor before the punch connected. That much was obvious. But if Vince had that sort of power, why had he played defensive for so long?
One thing was certain.
Michael was done taking it easy on this kid. Michael rose to his feet, reinforcing the area around his chin that Vince's fire had melted. Michael had no banter or sass this time, only unadulterated hatred in his eyes for the boy who had put him on his back. "Crap," Vince said, from the same spot he had knocked Michael back. "I was really hoping that would put you down for the count."
"It didn't," Michael replied.
13. Vince woke up an hour or so later in the healing clinic. He blinked as his eyes adjusted to the lighting and stretched slowly to banish the discomfort that had accumulated in his back after sleeping on the hard bed.
"Ah, thank God, you're finally awake," said a female voice to his right.
Vince pulled himself up to a sitting position and looked over. Resting on an identical bed was a tall girl wearing a black uniform similar to his. She had the lean, firm look of a track star, and held herself, even while sitting, with a sense of poise and control. The most striking feature about her, though, were the bright pink streaks running through her otherwise dark hair.
"Was I out long?" Vince asked. "Given that you were pretty much a hunk of solid ice when they brought you in, no, I'd say you slept an appropriate amount,"
the girl replied as she smirked.
"Solid ice, huh?" Vince said. "I seem to have recovered pretty nicely."
"Heat lamp and some healing. It's a dynamite combo," the girl quipped. "I guess sleep is part of it, too, but damn, it was boring having no one to talk to."
"Sorry about that," Vince apologized, without being sure why. "Why are you hanging around here, though? Didn't they heal you already?"
"Yeah," the girl said, "but they told me I had to rest in here until this afternoon, at least."
"Why?" Vince asked.
"Some bullshit about 15 broken bones needing to rest for a few hours, even with healing," the girl explained. "I'm Sasha, by the way, and before you say anything, I know it's an old woman name, so keep the jokes to a minimum."
"I wouldn't have dreamed of it," Vince lied. "My name is Vince. How'd you break 15 bones?"
"I lost my fight," Sasha replied with a shrug.
"Well, that does make a certain amount of sense," Vince said agreeably. "What type of ability were you fighting?"
"Some chick that can turn into solid steel," Sasha said.
Vince let out a low whistle.
"That's a good one."
"Yep, especially when she waited until I was charging at her with super speed to do her little shift. Kicking steel at a few hundred miles an hour, yeah, it kind of sucks," Sasha said. "So, how about you? I know you were fighting an ice dude, but what do you do? And while we're not on the subject, but I'm still going to ask anyway, who does your hair?"
"I absorb and redistribute energy, like absorbing the flame from a match and then shooting it out of my thumb. As for the hair, my genetics are my stylist," Vince said.
"Sweet ass," Sasha said. "If you can pack away fire, it must have been one hell of a fight with you and Frosty."
Sort of," Vince said awkwardly. "I kind of forgot to charge up before coming in today, so I was working with less than I would have liked."
"Hey, no need for excuses. We're both losers here," Sasha said.
She pulled out a lighter from the back pocket on her uniform and tossed it over to Vince.
"I don't smoke," Vince said.
"Which makes you look way less cool when standing around outside, but I didn't give it to you so you could light up," Sasha said.
"Then what's it for?" Vince asked.
"You used all your energy in the fight, right?"
Sasha said right back.
"Well, yeah.
Did I tell you that?"
Vince was growing more confused.
"No, but I figured you wouldn't have been a guy-sickle if you had any juice left. So I thought you might need a recharge,"
Sasha explained through her transparent exasperation.
"Oh, I couldn't," Vince said quickly. "I usually drain all the energy and fuel when I do it, so your lighter would be useless."
It came in a pack of 20 for $5. I'll be okay with the loss. Besides, I've never seen that ability before. I'll trade a lighter for a show, Sasha said.
Vince wanted to protest more, but the truth was, he did feel stiff and listless. He remembered how draining the matches had made him feel a bit better the day before, and his aching muscles throbbed again. Vince had spent nearly all of his life with at least a little energy stored up. He was beginning to wonder if the recent constant fatigue had not been a side effect of the experiments done to him, but rather a side effect from constantly running on empty. With only slight trepidation, Vince flicked the lighter on with his left hand. With his right, he reached out to it, forging a connection to the energy leaking out from the metal-topped plastic container. The flame jerked toward him and began flowing in. The lighter had far more potential energy than a single match, so it took a few seconds before it ran dry and the light of the flame vanished. Vince stretched again, noting that the soreness had definitely decreased. He also felt a bit more awake and alert. The lighter had packed significantly more juice than half a pack of matches.
That was pretty cool looking, I have to admit, Sasha commented.
Thanks, Vince said. I think I needed that more than I thought. You want the lighter back?
Keep it, Sasha said. Dead lighter isn't much use to me, you know?
That I do, Vince agreed. So are they going to tell us when everyone is done fighting, or do we just rest until we feel like we should go?
Oh, you're free to go any time, Sasha told him. If you hurry, you might still catch the last of the boys' matches.
What about the girls? Vince asked.
Those wrapped up, like, half an hour ago. My roommate already texted me some of the rankings, Sasha said.
How'd you do? Vince couldn't imagine a girl with super speed had fared too poorly.
19 out of 22, Sasha said glumly. That steel bitch took me down in the first round. Even Julia did better than me.
That sucks, Vince said. Is Julia your roommate?
Yeah, and number 14 in the ranking, Sasha said. She made it to the second round, but then she got put down hard. They couldn't really dock her too many points for it, though. I mean, the broad who beat her did wind up ranked number 1 for the girls.
Who was that? Vince asked out of curiosity.
I haven't met her yet, Sasha said. But Julia told me it was some telekinetic girl named Mary.
14. Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport sat at Dean Blaine's desk, looking across the sleek mahogany surface at his unapologetic scowl. The lights in Dean Blaine's office were fluorescent and bright, like a compromise between high beams and lamps. The decor was stark, with little more than a diploma and a few awards adorning the four walls around them. Mr. Transport had a vaguely uncomfortable feeling, but was unsure how to place it. Mr. Numbers, on the other hand, had been something of a hellion during his younger days, and knew immediately why this sensation was both unenjoyable and familiar. It felt almost exactly as if he was once again 14 years old and sitting in the principal's office, trying desperately to figure which crime he had been discovered at.
"When I agreed to host your students," Dean Blaine began at last, "I did so with the understanding that these were unfortunate children who were being provided with an opportunity to get some measure of control in their otherwise hectic lives. These were powers that had been spurned by fate and society alike, and now that they could actually use their abilities, they wanted to become heroes, give something back to the world. That was the way your organization pitched them, correct?"
Mr. Numbers cleared his throat.
"Well, we aren't really consulted in matters of marketing and diplomacy, but I will admit that does sound like something our company would say."
"Regardless of who said it, you two are the representatives that I have at hand. so you are going to have to be answerable for your company as a whole," Dean Blaine said. "Which brings me to why I called you down here to my office." He slid a piece of paper onto the smooth, polished surface of his desk. "Would one of you like to guess what that is?" Mr. Transport took the paper first, since he had the longer arms and could reach. "It appears to be a ranking of the freshman female students entering your program," Mr. Transport said after a quick glance. "Correct," Dean Blaine agreed. "Now will you read for me the first name on that list?"
"Mary Smith,"
Mr. Transport said. He was very thankful he had worked so hard for so long at keeping all emotions, including surprise, out of his voice when needed.
"You nailed it," Dean Blaine said, with a very out-of-place smile. "Now for the last question. Can you please explain to me how a girl who had almost no control over her abilities until a few months ago managed to wipe the floor with every other freshman we put her up against?"
"In all fairness, just because she won doesn't mean she wiped the floor with them,"
Mr. Numbers jumped in.
"I saw her last fight, which was, coincidentally, her longest, myself," Dean Blaine said. "It lasted all of 22 seconds, and was against a girl who transformed into solid steel."
"How did Mary beat that?"
Mr. Numbers asked with genuine interest.
"She forced her opponent halfway through the concrete wall, face first. We were forced to remove the girl before she suffocated," Dean Blaine explained. "Given their respective powers, that seems like the best method she had," Mr. Transport said.
"Oh, the strategy was sound. No one could question that," Dean Blaine acknowledged.
"The problem is that no girl her age should be able to generate that much telekinetic force, let alone one whose abilities have been fully functioning for only a few months. Forcing a human being made of steel through several inches of concrete at point-blank range is a feat that only those who have been training for decades are able to pull off. There are certified heroes that couldn't have managed to accomplish that so effortlessly."
"So, if I am to understand you, you're concerned about why Mary is so much stronger than she should be," Mr. Numbers said carefully.
He desperately wished he had his usual calculations running through his head so he could jump ahead of the conversation, but unfortunately, around Dean Blaine, that was impossible.
"I am concerned that you did more than just help these children," Dean Blaine exclaimed as he rose from his seat. "I am concerned that perhaps your company, under the guise of feeling sorry for these dregs of the world, decided that they wouldn't just give the kids control, they would amplify the children's powers a bit. After all, they've already agreed to be guinea pigs. Why not run them through every experimental procedure you've got?"
From the way the dean was panting and gesturing, it was very apparent to both Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport how much harm the dean believed a little extra testing could do.
"I can assure you that is not the case," Mr. Numbers said. "Even if the doctors and nurses were not heavily monitored during the children's treatment, which they were, the company has never successfully found a way to amplify a person's natural abilities, super or powered."
"Until a few months ago, I was under the impression that no one had ever found a way to turn powereds into supers, so you'll forgive me if I'm a bit skeptical of your assurances on the lack of existing technology," Dean Blaine said.
He did seem a bit pacified, though, at least enough to retake his seat.
"Be that as it may, it is the truth," Mr. Numbers said. "All our company did was give Mary the ability to control the power she already had. Perhaps it is just that she was born with a very strong ability, and is only now learning to use it."
"It is possible,"
Dean Blaine conceded.
"And for the girl's sake, I hope that's the truth of it."
"What do you mean?" Mr. Transport said,
a bit more harshness to his voice than he wanted. The dean wouldn't notice, but Mr. Numbers would scold him for tipping his hand even slightly, though he couldn't help it. Mr. Transport had been put here to control, but also to protect, the students in his dorm. Responding with harshness to a perceived threat was a natural reaction. As it turned out, though, it was an unwarranted one.
"I mean that for a girl that young to be that powerful, there are only two options. If one discounts the possibility of outside enhancers," Dean Blaine said, not without some suspicion lingering in his voice.
"Which we are," Mr. Numbers replied without missing a beat.
"Yes. Anyway, the only ways she could be that strong are if she was born with a tremendous gift, or if she put herself through an unimaginably hellish training," Dean Blaine said.
"What sort of training?" Mr. Transport asked.
"Well, most telekinetics are also telepaths. Something to do with the part of the brain that gets the power," Dean Blaine said. "Anyway, many of those with the advanced mind ability train up their telekinesis by learning to sharpen their focus. The better they can focus, the more power they can use, and the faster it comes. One of the more popular methods of training is to open up their telepathy as much as they can bear and try to function constantly under the barrage of voices. It helps them learn to focus on tasks at hand and blot out the ambient noise that's always assaulting them."
"Interesting," Mr. Numbers said, praying silently that Mr. Transport wasn't giving anything away on his face. "I had never heard of that."
"You wouldn't have," Dean Blaine said. "It's really only something you know of if your job is training supers day in and day out."
"So some of the more powerful ones must be able to blot out a lot of noise," Mr. Numbers said casually. "What's the most you've heard of someone being able to function with?"
"Well, of course, I don't know what all of them do, but the best I've personally witnessed was a hero who could still function while hearing all the thoughts around him in a 3-mile radius," Dean Blaine said. "He's a top-notch one, too. Can do some amazing things with that brain of his."
Neither Mr. Transport nor Mr. Numbers responded. At that moment, they had glanced at each other and were having another of their standard silent conversations. There wasn't much to say in the way of details, merely a subtle sense of panic and surprise. Unbeknownst to Dean Blaine, the company Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport worked for had done a similar radius test on Mary in their pre-program evaluation. Mary's range was 5 miles, and she was able to function perfectly normally while listening to all of that in a populated city. Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport quickly excused themselves.
15. "You're sure it's okay for you to be walking?" Vince asked, as they made their way down the steel and concrete hall.
"No, but I think they were mainly worried about me breaking the sound barrier, not going to the main hall to check the results,"
Sasha replied. Julia had texted her that the boys' fights were finished, but rather than getting the results from her roommate, Sasha had cajoled Vince into seeing for himself.
"Well, okay," Vince said reluctantly. "Just let me know if you need to lean on me or something."
"I bet you say that to all the mending girls with super speed," Sasha said.
"Only the ones with pink and black hair," Vince shot back.
"Good answer, Silver. Good answer."
Sasha might have continued their verbal dance, but at that point they stepped out of the tunnel and into the main hall. It was really more of an entrance foyer than anything else. Conveyor systems that ran to the respective dorms were on one side, while an enormous screen was perched overhead on the opposite end of the room. There were various hallways like the one Vince and Sasha were emerging from, and at the moment there was a tremendous cluster of black-uniformed freshmen under the screen, looking eagerly for their name in the listings. The screen was split into two sections currently, the boys' list and girls' list. Most of the attention was geared toward the boys' listings, but in fairness, the girls had been finished for at least an hour or so. Vince and Sasha made their way into the rabble of freshmen and began their short search of the boys' list. It took Vince a few minutes to find his name, not because the list was enormous or complicated, but because he was looking in the wrong part of it. When he couldn't find himself in the bottom section, he finally looked to the higher rankings, though he was utterly unprepared for what awaited him there.
"Eighth?" Vince exclaimed. "How the hell am I eighth? There are like 30 guys, and I went down in the first round. Was there a mistake?"
"It isn't just about how many fights you were in," Sasha said soothingly. "They were also evaluating how you used your abilities against the ones you were fighting, how you dealt with their techniques, and how well you thought on your feet. If you were fighting a really lopsided battle and still managed to show solid skills, then that was factored in."
"Yeah, but still, eighth?"
Vince sighed and tried to relax. It was a good thing. A high ranking was something he should be proud of. He'd been a coward until 2 months ago, and here he'd managed to show up 22 supers by outdoing them. It was an accomplishment. Vince just wished it was one he felt like he had earned.
"Didn't you say the guy you fought was named Michael?" Sasha asked.
"Yeah."
"Looks like he made it to number 3,
Sasha said, pointing up at the list. Vince checked for himself, and, sure enough, she was right. Michael Clark was the 3rd strongest male there, below the number 1 slot, Chad Taylor, and the number 2 slot, Shane DeSoto. Vince was about to look away when the name in the number 5 slot caught his eye.
"Who is Roy Daniels?" Vince asked. "According to Julia, the sexiest man she's seen in years," Sasha said. "She keeps texting my ass about him. Also, he's number 5.
"I wonder if he has a brother," Vince speculated. "One of my dorm mates is named Herschel Daniels."
"Herschel, huh? I don't see him up there," Sasha said.
It was true. Vince looked and looked, but Herschel's name didn't appear anywhere on either list. Nick was listed at number 30 on the boys' side, and Alice had come in just below Sasha at 20th on the girls'. But try as they might, the only Daniels they could find on the board was Roy.
"Weird," Sasha said at last. "Do you think Roy is Herschel, but they messed up his name?"
"I somehow doubt it," Vince said. "Nothing against Herschel. He seems like a really nice guy, but he isn't the type that your roommate would be constantly texting about."
"How do you know? Maybe he's Julia's type,"
Sasha said, a glimmer of antagonism in her voice. "Does she like LARP and tabletop games? Because that's what Herschel told us he loves to do in his free time," Vince countered.
"Oh, no. Totally a different dude," Sasha agreed quickly. "Well, whatever. Just ask him about it when you get back to your dorm."
"I'll have to," Vince said, "especially since none of my fellow Melbrook residents seem to have hung out after they saw their ranks."
"No worries. I bet they licked their wounds in time for casino night," Sasha said optimistically.
"Casino night?" Vince asked.
"There are flyers up all over the dorms," Sasha said.
"Must have missed them," Vince said, doing his best to sound casual in the deflection.
"It's in the student union tonight at 7, Sasha explained. "Free food, fake gambling with free chips you can use for raffles, and all the karaoke you can handle. Supers and normals are both invited."
"That sort of sounds like fun," Vince said.
"Yeah, we can meet more fellow freshmen. Maybe we'll even make a friend or two that can't lift a bus or melt steel," Sasha said.
"Very true," Vince agreed. "I don't really know anyone here except my dorm mates. Oh, and now you, too."
"Same boat," Sasha said. "I met Julia because she's my roommate, but you're the only other friend I've made so far. Combat doesn't really engender communal feelings on the first day."
"Maybe that's why they do it," Vince speculated.
"Point,"
Sasha said.
Well, I'm going to head back up to the dorm. Seven is only a few hours away, and I am desperate for a shower. You think you'll go to casino night?
Positive.
Sweet,
Sasha said, pulling out the E sound a bit.
Want to meet up at the entrance and then lose all our fake money together?
Absolutely, Vince said.